welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 123 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel, in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel, to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so those joining us live, please feel free to use the Q&A. And if you have other questions about other topics, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where, as always, we offer you an exciting opportunity to take home something really valuable. And please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. As we were just talking about in the warm-up to the beginning of this conversation before we started recording, today's topic has been on the minds of many people all around the world, here in Israel and the United States, certainly in Iran and other points in between, for some weeks at least. This particularly was triggered out of a WhatsApp chat I was having with my friend Trey Graham, who's one of our panelists tonight, not more than 3 days ago, I think. And we suddenly decided that we saw pretty much eye to eye on the topic of what's happening in Iran with the potential deal and seeing biblical parallels. And really miraculously, and with great partnership, we put together in about 24 hours an article that's now been widely published in several different sources. And I knew it was important to have this conversation, and also that John Haller would be a really great collaborator and complement. And I think Trey and John, as you speak, certainly feel free to interject, and I don't think you'll contradict so much, but complement one another. Let me introduce our guests and just get into the topic. Are Israel's concerns about a U.S.-Iran deal legitimate, and why? Alphabetically, Pastor Trey Graham is a West Point graduate. He's the senior pastor of First Melissa Church in Texas, a radio host, columnist for various publications, and the Christian correspondent for ILTV News here in Israel. He's also one of the authors in our stunning book that came out just before the war began in 2023, Israel the Miracle, which I encourage you to get. John Haller is a retired lawyer. Sometimes I like to call him a recovering lawyer. Bible prophecy teacher at the Fellowship Bible Chapel, as well as the popular host of a radio and YouTube program, often featuring issues relating to Israel and matters relating to that. And Trey and John, other than it being really a pleasure to have you today and to get into the conversation, I want to say that both in the lead up to this, when we ask attendees if they have any questions in advance, a few of the attendees complimented just that they were excited to hear from the two of you. So those weren't questions, but affirmations of you both being here. And I think you've both been on previous programs. So welcome back to Inspiration from Zion.
Wonderful to be with you today. Wonderful.
Trey, I want to start with you. All the days are a blur to me, but it is like 3 days ago that we were having this chat, and you and I did a really good collaboration writing the article that we did, and I'll put that link available and so people can read it. It definitely frames it, but I'm curious because that chat motivated the article, and for me the article motivated this conversation. And I didn't ask you, but I want to ask you to start off the question. What motivated you to suggest co-authoring the article to begin with?
Well, the topic of Israel and Iran and Iran's nuclear capabilities is a concern for everybody who is a supporter of Israel. For those in America, the question about what will the Trump administration do, what will President Trump do, that's a question we ask every single day. And when it comes to the Iran nuclear deal, there are reports that the U.S. has been negotiating through the intermediary of Oman with the Iranian regime about allowing their processing of materials, the enrichment of uranium, to continue. Now, of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu wants that to stop and has demanded for a decade or more that it stop. President Trump has announced, especially on social media, that it should stop. But there are these reports that back channel negotiations are going on. And what we talked about in the article that you've mentioned is the Iranian strategy has always been, historically, the centuries-old Persian strategy has been to delay and delay and delay and say yes, but, and then offer an alternative and then go back and review the terms and just delay and string it out as long as you can. And so one of the big questions the world has to ask right now is, number one, will Israel attack Iran on its own without U.S. military assistance? And number two, will Israel attack Iran while these negotiations are going on? And if that happens, will Trump support them and the Trump administration support them? So Israel is rightfully worried about Iran having nuclear capability. It is 100% legitimate fear by the Israelis. What will America do about that fear is the question we're all asking.
Right. And the other piece, just to add to the mix, is that by this fall, whatever terms of the original JCPOA, the Obama deal from 2015, the sunset clause expires. And as I understand that, that means that they, without any change, they can just basically begin producing and doing what they want. It was a straight kick the can down the road. Am I misreading that?
The delay kick the can down the road strategy is true. However, while the JCPOA is technically in effect, when Trump left it, the Iranians considered it dead anyway. They weren't constrained by it. So it's really a moot point.
So when the Europeans are concerned that there needs to be a deadline for some sort of action, end of negotiation, in fact, it really doesn't matter, because if something needs to happen militarily or the snapback sanctions, which if you read in between the lines in some reports, maybe even the Europeans strangely would seem to want to support.
The Europeans, I believe, are observers to this process. They're not right in the middle.
John, you want to add anything to that? We widened the conversation. We're already talking about Europe.
So I have a lot of friends in Europe. I'm in regular contact with them, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But the United Kingdom, for example, came out yesterday with a evaluation, a report about how they're going to build a stronger military. I would say that my assessment of reviewing many, many documents about the state of NATO militaries is that they're very, very weak, and that it's largely a pipe dream. I think what Trey said is exactly correct, that we should not in this analysis, I don't think Israel really needs to worry about what the EU says, because the EU is weak. When you have Emmanuel Macron as sort of the shining light, we're going to be a strong military alliance either through the EU or NATO. It's a lot of fluff. And so the one country you do need to worry about, though, is Turkey. Turkey has the second largest military in NATO behind the United States. And, of course, they're very active in the region as well through Syria and other proxies. I will just say, my overall assessment is that this is an incredibly complex issue. And if we're just going to focus on Iran, it's the complexities of getting rid of the Iranian threat, the nuclear threat, is a very daunting task. Now, I think Israel's up to it to a point, but we can talk more details about that. Okay. But, I'm a trial lawyer, so I always sit there and try to think about all the things that can go wrong. Unfortunately, in this case, I think it's probably fairly accurate.
Then the shorter answer at the end, we can say, well, what can go right? But I want to pick up with something that Trey said, and I liked how we included it in our article, and John shared that with you, and you had an interesting comment on it. The article, we made an analogy to Haman and the Book of Esther, and a genocidal anti-Semitic Persian leader wanting to annihilate the Jewish people. There was not a state of Israel, although it was a successor who let us come back, which was not an insignificant thing in terms of what Persian Jewish relations had once been. But we're all, I'm an Orthodox Jew. You're Trey, I know, a follower of Jesus. We don't necessarily use the word Christian, but even if I use that loosely, I know it's not offensive. We look at things through a biblical prism. So I want to, and we're also all Americans. So I want to ask the question, to what extent, while we look at this, the three of us, and I suspect everyone following now, through a biblical prism, where is it legitimate for biblical prism to stop in terms of its overlay with U.S. policy, if at all? John, you want to start on that?
Well, look, I think that as Trump, and I don't know if this is answering your question or not, Jonathan. If I get off track, draw me back. I think when Trump came into office, there has been, for Christians or followers of Jesus that are also Zionists, such as myself, there was some optimism that things would get back on track. You know, Trump had withdrawn from the earlier JCPOA. He had done things during his first administration, such as moving the embassy to Jerusalem. And I think Trump genuinely wanted peace in the region. And we can argue whether, for example, the Abraham Accords were not a good thing. There was a great desire to normalize things with, various Arab countries. Some have signed on to the Abraham Accords, but Saudi Arabia is not. And if we just think back to 2 weeks before October 7th, 2023, there was a big to-do about, it looks like Saudi Arabia is coming into the Abraham Accords. Saudi Arabia is going to normalize things with Israel. I personally don't think that that's going to happen until the king dies. I don't think Mohammed bin Salman would go against the wishes of his father. We have to be honest that Saudi Arabia has long been a proponent of, well, since when it's sort of not too long after 9/11, actually. Arab Peace Initiative, that it's going to be pushed. And, you know, Mohammed bin Salman did a fairly well-known interview on Fox News in September saying, hey, you know, things are going to change in the Middle East. It's going to be historical. Benjamin Netanyahu went to the UN and spoke a few days later and said, you know, we're on the verge of a massive change in the Middle East. October 7th sort of upended all of that. Now, that was, I think, by design. Hamas was concerned about the way things were going and they wanted to intervene. And now here we sit a year and a half later, and things are, Israel has done an amazing job on many, many levels, like far beyond anything that, you know, if a Book of Esther was being written today, all the stuff that's happened would certainly be included.
Excellent.
Because it's sort of the age old story about the fight to get rid of Israel and its people. And is, like I said, the beepers, the taking out of the Hamas leadership, getting rid of the Hezbollah leadership, dismantling Hezbollah. And then I think more relevant to today's topic on Iran was the stunning attack. By any military analyst in the world would tell you what Israel did in late September, early October 2024.
Yeah.
That it was just absolutely stunning what they did. They went in and they dismantled a lot of the air defenses.
Right.
And this is not technically, this is a very, very difficult thing that they do. And it was done with precision. It was done with no losses of aircraft or life or anything. And but here's the problem. So that was during the U.S. election. Trump won, and everybody thought, well, Trump's just going to bless Israel continuing. And that has not turned out to be the case. And so to a lot of us who love Israel and who see the interest of Israel and the United States very much aligned, both from a Judeo-Christian tradition, also democratic values and that type of thing, I personally am very, very concerned with the direction that things are going. But there's been great optimism, and there's been some good things done. I think Mike Huckabee, as the U.S. ambassador to Israel, was a great choice. But it's the other side of the negotiations and that type of thing that are going on that's very, very concerning.
So I want to come back, and I want to focus you and then ask Trey the same thing.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
Coming back to the biblical perspective, which we all imbue, right? It's who we are. Where is it out of bounds to take our biblical perspective and look and you're being very direct in terms of things that you're not so thrilled with that the Trump administration is doing? Where is there a boundary or is there no boundary at all? Is our biblical perspective legitimate? And whoever the sitting president is and his or in the future, her administration should be held by the same biblical standard.
Well, I'll let Trey, maybe you want to handle that first. I have some thoughts, but why don't you go ahead?
First, as a follower of Jesus, as a supporter of Israel, all the sayings that we've already said, but also as a Bible teacher and a Bible student, I don't think the Bible is ever irrelevant to this conversation. So you're asking, are there places in this where it's out of bounds? No. Okay. The Bible is a timeless document. It's a perfect document. Now, is it written specifically for this century and this era? No. But are there principles that are 100% applicable? Yes, and we've talked in our article, and you've mentioned it already, the story of Esther. That was governmental policy. That was a decree by a Persian leader to kill all the Jews, to murder people for the crime of being Jewish. So the question then became, what would the Jews do in response? Would they try to run away? Would they sit by and wait to be killed? Or would they fight back? And we all know the story. Mordecai led the effort to convince the queen, to convince the king, and all of that. So the Jews had the right to fight back. a significant difference in that context and this context is, in today's world, the Jewish people, specifically the nation of Israel, that is an independent state with its own military and its own leadership, and they can be proactive, not reactive. As much as Mordecai is a hero and Esther is a hero, they were subjects to the king. They were not in charge of their own destiny. They requested permission to fight back. The Israelis right now, as Netanyahu likes to say, will defend themselves by themselves if necessary.
Okay, so fasting and praying is still a good thing, but now we have F-35s.
Amen.
Okay. John, did you want to add something?
Well, you know, Jonathan, I'm sitting here looking at, you know, your email, which is Genesis 1:2-3, which is Genesis 12:3, which is a principle by which I think it's wise for our government to act. I'll bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you. And that gets a little bit tricky. And how do you apply that to government policy? But I have to tell you that I am impressed more and more each day on about 80 levels about the biblical times in which we live, and
prophetic times.
Prophetic, yes. It's I use the term a lot in the talks that I give on these topics, that with the way this prophetic thing unfolds, and it's centered around Israel, there's just no doubt about that. These things happen gradually, then suddenly. That comes from a Hemingway novel. I think it's The Sun Also Rises. Two characters are talking, and the one says to the other, "How did you end up going bankrupt?" And he says, "Well, two ways. First, gradually, then suddenly." And I sort of think that that's how these prophetic scriptures are unfolding in the way that we look. Now, this is a little bit off topic, but we talked about it beforehand. What Ukraine did with regard to Russia and the complete, and this is a cliche, I guess, paradigm shift in how modern warfare is going to be conducted, with stealth and AI and all of this other stuff. What happened in Russia over the weekend was at least a 9.5 earthquake on a scale of 10. And I'm trying to think how that translates to what Israel has to do vis-a-vis Iran. And I think that, I told you, my wife and I took a long trip for our 50th wedding anniversary. We traveled 8,300 miles across the United States, 20 states, a lot in the West. And the whole time I'm out there, I'm literally thinking that the terrain that we passed through in the West and the mountains and that type of thing is very similar to the terrain in Iran. And I kept looking at mountains. I'd looked at a mesa. I'd look at a valley and that type of thing. And I was thinking, like, how does Israel neutralize the Iranian nuclear threat that they've moved underground? And it's going to be very difficult. I think there's things that they can do that are capable, but I do think they need the assistance of the United States and others to do that. Okay. And I'm not sure that it's there right now.
Well, that's the thing. And with the, you know, the Ukrainian attack on Russia could either give a lovely cover for Israel to go while no one's looking and take out the nuclear sites, regardless of whether the negotiations going on, or could distract Trump and the Trump administration from even thinking about the Iran front. But let's stick with that.
Okay.
As it relates to President Trump, what do you think is motivating him now? We're all articulating concerns. What's the motivation behind it?
I'm trying to figure that out.
Okay.
I will tell you that Trump there's a very mixed feeling about Donald Trump, even among the Christian community here in the United States. And he's not very predictable, other than that he's very transactional and he loves to do deals.
Okay.
And I'll be blunt. I'm very concerned that he has moved into this Middle East, the trip to the Middle East that he took in May was, in my view, vis-a-vis what I think are the best interests of the United States and how that sort of matches up with Israel's, it was a debacle.
Okay. Trey? What's motivating?
The question about what does Mr. Trump want is, as John just said, that's the question the whole world is asking. Has Mr. Trump stood with Israel? Yes. Has he done enough? No, and for my wishes, but I don't think he can do enough for my wishes.
Wow.
So it's surrounding himself with pro-Israel people, with pro-Zionist people. Ambassador Huckabee is one example of that. Marco Rubio at Secretary of State's another example of that. Those are the kinds of people that we or I would want in those positions. Is the Iran nuclear deal and Israel's existential threat the number one thing on Trump's plate? No. And that's one thing that the Israelis have to remember, and the rest of the world has to remember, is Trump thrives on juggling 100 balls at the same time. You see that in his pop-up news conferences. They're very impressive when he's answering questions about every topic that a reporter can think of. He literally juggles 100 balls at a time topically. So none of them are a number one. So for Israel, this is a number one. And to stay on the front burner for the Trump administration, the Israelis have to keep pressuring, requesting, advising, questioning, whatever the verb is, to keep it front and center for the American administration, because that's not the only thing that the Trump administration is focused on. And Bibi's trying to do that. But so is Zelensky. Zelensky wants Ukraine to be a number one on the Trump radar.
Yep.
The Republicans in Congress want the big, beautiful bill to be a number one on Trump's mind. All the trade tariffs and the Wall Street people want that to be a number one. So literally Trump is juggling all of these things. And that's why Israel has to make its decision. Are we going forward with something because we don't believe that the negotiations will work? Even if a negotiation is made and Iran signs a document, the Israelis don't believe the Iranians will be held to a document. So Israel has to decide, are we going to move forward with a military attack on Iran, regardless of American participation?
And the consequences. It's not necessarily that the U.S. is just going to say, like the king in Persia, oh yeah, fine, do what you want. Here's my ring, go sign it. That's not necessarily happening.
Well, please God, America won't punish Israel. They just might sit out. I don't think they're going to use their diplomatic or UN Security Council or anything like that, even economic. I don't think they're going to punish Israel. Please God.
Okay.
The question is, will they participate militarily or not? And now you're talking to me from a political and a biblical, and now you're talking to me from a military perspective, and they're all intertwined, but they're all separate.
And do you happen to have the answer?
I'm not supposed to say anything like that on the air, of course, but America's Israel, America's military is very much in constant communication with Israel's military.
Okay. Okay. John, anything to add, compliment?
I'll use the example of the Houthis. Trump tried sort of, in my opinion, that's an Israel fight. Okay. But then Trump sort of, I think, backdoored Israel and sort of reaching some kind of an agreement. I'm not sure what it was with the Houthis. And it's not been dealt with. And I think that what's going on with the Houthis is indicative of the difficulty that we have, because, you know, as we drove around the West, the one thing we kept saying to each other was, this is a very, very big world, and we're very, very small, and Israel is very small, and the distances, you know, the modern military aircraft and missile technology and that type of thing, there are ranges and everything, and so we're sort of Israel stretching that envelope as far as they can. And Israel's done some amazing things, but the Houthis are still firing these missiles. Jonathan, you know, we're talking here before we start, hey, if you have to go to the bomb shelter, you know, we'll continue with this podcast. and it's sort of like, oh, wait a minute, where are those missiles coming from? And they're coming from the Houthis. And I mean, I have the Red Alert app, so I use Zophar is the one I use. Right. It goes off all the time. Every day there's something. And you live there, you know it. Nothing much happens as a result. Occasionally one will get through, but, you know, it's usually something. They're not going to shoot everyone down. They're going to let the ones that aren't going to cause damage to get through anyway. But it's still the psychological burden of all of this. And it was worse in the North. I want to back up for a minute. So I was interviewing a lot of security experts, people from Alma Research and people like Miri Eisen, you know, I think very intelligent, very knowledgeable in security issues. And early on in this war that started on October 7th was a concern that what happens when Hezbollah cuts loose?
Right.
And we were having conversations. I'm sure you had them with people too, Jonathan, that the concern was that there would be 15 to 20,000 dead Israelis a week.
Yes.
For a couple of months.
Yeah.
None of that happened.
Correct.
I mean, all the lives that have lost have been precious, too many. But, you know, I'm not sure what are you at, about 1,500 soldiers, including the ones on October 7th?
1,200, I think. Yeah.
Okay, 1,200.
More last night, but yeah.
400 and something in the combat operation.
Correct.
I mean, this is shocking. And I've been reading intelligence analyses about the North for a very long time. When we were in Israel in 2017, we took a day, and it was the day Trump was in Jerusalem. We got a car and we drove up to the Golan, and we drove all the way along as close as we could to the Lebanon border, all the way to Nahariya, because I wanted to get the lay of the land. And yeah, I've been watching this for years. And what Israel did was nothing short of miraculous, that they've been able to change that dynamic up there. But there were, what were there, 60, 80, 100,000 people who had to leave their home for...
Many are still out. Many are still gone. And
okay. And so this is a year and a half or more.
Correct.
But they did dismantle a large portion of what Hezbollah could do, a main Iranian proxy. They took out the leadership. They did the pager beeper attack. They did, they took out Nasrallah. And by the way, I think the Nasrallah elimination is probably an example of what they're going to have to do on a much, much larger scale in Iran to get these underground facilities. Drop dozens of tons of bombs in the same place.
Fortunately, they're not in main cities in most cases.
Right.
Because nobody's looking for civilian casualties.
Trey. Yeah. And you do this at the time too, when the Iranian regime is pretty weak domestically, but they're very entrenched. And then the question is, if you take out the regime, what replaces it? That's always that's the tricky thing there too. So there's a lot that can go wrong, but I just think that attacking these underground facilities as they exist now is a very daunting task. And I'll just say this, because, and I'll kind of just throw this out there. I mean, I've been reading a lot of reports about the IAEA report about Iran's been doing things that they shouldn't have been doing by all estimates. And this is the problem, that even if Israel takes out and does this massive, miraculous campaign,
right,
they've not destroyed the institutional knowledge of this within Iran, unless they can also couple it with regime change. So if that institutional knowledge survives, and it will,
well,
then they're going to have to do it over and over again.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and are models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
It's interesting you say that, because we all remember 1979, when we all remember 1978, when Jimmy Carter stupidly threw the Shah under the bus and let him come to America, and as a result, in a sense, birthed the Islamic regime with no consequence. It was only Ronald Reagan being elected that got those hostages back then. But when Trump, I look at this and I say, if we give Trump the credit of wanting to be a peacemaker, sometimes peace has to come through some really serious actions. And the big peace in the Middle East, and Trey, I want to use this to segue for a moment. The big peace is undoing what Jimmy Carter did by having no more Islamic regime. And on that note, Trey, you and I spoke about it offline before. Joe Hawkins wrote a question, which is, to me, right on target. Do you see Jeremiah 49:34-39, the prophecy concerning Elam, being in play? And could a strike on Iran's nuclear facilities fulfill or initiate the prophecy? Trey, you were commenting on that offline.
Well, we mentioned earlier that the scriptures are always applicable. They're always relevant. And when you get specific names in Bible prophecy,
yeah,
even more targeted. So Jeremiah 49 talks about a place called Elam, E-L-A-M. Well, Elam is the name of Persia before it became Persia and later became Iran. So Elam is Iran. And the prophecy specifically addresses the Lord himself, called the Lord of hosts, in this passage, speaking to Jeremiah about Elam. And in chapter 35, the quote is, the Lord speaking, I am going to break the bow of Elam, the finest of their might. So the prophecy is interpreted to say, the strongest military asset, the strongest weaponry that Elam possesses will be destroyed by God himself. Now, in 700 BC, what was the strongest military might that Elam would have possessed? Who knows? Chariots. But today, what is the strongest military might. It is not just a ballistic missile. It is a nuclear capable ballistic missile. So the Lord himself made a prophecy that he will do it. And all of us who are students of Bible prophecy and believers in the word know that when God makes a promise, he will keep the promise. Now, his method of doing so, he doesn't lay out in specific. So he can do it through negotiation. He can do it through an earthquake. He can do it through military strikes. He can do it any way he wants to. But what's important is not only in verse 35 is the Lord quoted as saying that Elam will be broken, but the same chapter, verse 37, he says, I will shatter Elam before their enemies and before those who seek their lives, and I will bring disaster upon them. And then the next verse, 38 and 39, says God himself will set up his throne in Elam, that he will be worshipped, that he will be revered in Elam. So there's going to be a prophecy fulfilled about military action and a spiritual awakening. And we believe those are still coming in the future. And that's all from Jeremiah 49.
And excuse the lack of knowledge, but you can't have a spiritual awakening without regime change in Iran at this point. I mean, God couldn't do anything, but under the current formula, that's kind of hard to see the spiritual awakening with the supreme leader.
Well, my friend, I must disagree with you because there's already spiritual awakening going on in Iran. Many Iranians coming to faith in Jesus.
Okay.
I was speaking with someone from Germany this week, and they were explaining to me all of the Iranian Christians who are seeking asylum in Germany.
No kidding.
So there is a spiritual awakening happening in Iran, even while the Islamic Republic regime is in power.
Excellent. Okay. So let me
now. Anyway, I would second that those are reports that I've also heard as well. The extent to which exact the depth of that or the breadth of that, we don't really know exactly because we're not there. But there has been change there in Iran. And Iran, you know, we look at the prophecies, Jonathan, we see Elam. And it's, and, you know, I sort of view these Bible prophecy passages very real, going to unfold maybe in our lifetimes. But, you know, it seems like there, you look at Ezekiel 36, Ezekiel 37, Ezekiel 38 and 39. You look at Jeremiah 49. And it seems like they talk about all these things that happen, and then there's a gap, and then they will know that I am the Lord. And so the question is, how does all of this sequence, because we also know that Persia is a main player in the Ezekiel 38 and 39 prophecies that people talk about all the time.
Right.
And Turkey as well. So I just think that we're at this, when I do talks of Bible prophecy, I always talk about my little grid that I look at: acceleration, convergence, logistics, and understanding. Daniel saying in Daniel 12, 11 and 12, that the wise will look, see these things, and the wise will understand and instruct many. So we want to be some of the wise guys, I guess, in how this unfolds, but it's a little bit tricky. And I'm just saying, I'm sitting here, that it's going so fast.
Yeah.
And, but it's also, there's sort of like a narrative that continues all the way. For example, the U.S. I hate to use the term deep state, but I will, because there is one. The U.S. deep state intelligence apparatus, security apparatus, I cannot explain this. I've watched this for years, studied it for a long time, has been extremely pro-Iranian. Like, well, if we just give our, we just, and I don't know what is driving that. My suspicion is that Iran has some very important resources that people want. And so they think, well, if we can manage that, we'll get the resources from Iran. But there's been a pro-Iranian stream through all U.S. administrations. And I see it happening. It's rearing its head in the Trump administration right now.
Thank you. Okay, so I want to segue. I was going to go this direction anyway. An anonymous attendee made a statement, which I'm going to compliment. Israel should have a roundtable, serious discussion with the U.S. military and President Donald Trump for a U.S. military to forcefully hold down Iran in this deal so they don't rebel because Iran can't be trusted. The U.S. and Israel military should make them, I assume is the word, to achieve success. It's an interesting comment. My question is to the two of you, is any deal with Iran something that can be trusted? And the follow-up to that is any deal with Iran a good deal?
Well, I'll go first. I only have a couple minutes left, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Is any deal with Iran to be trusted? Well, the president says no. Okay.
Good.
The questioner with a good question asked, should American military be used to enforce an agreement? Well, that is a political decision and a geostrategic decision. And while all of us on this call, and assuming all of your viewers, are pro-Israel, we have to remind ourselves that the Americans in this audience, that the American government makes its decisions on what's best for America first, good, not what's best for Israel.
Good.
So if the two things are in alignment, then the American military will be ordered by the American civil leadership to make a military strike because it is advantageous for America, not just because it's advantageous for Israel. The America first cliche, that's the Trump policy. This is what has differed between the Biden administration and the Trump administration. Trump has been asking, what is America getting out of all of this money being sent to Ukraine? So the question is not a theoretical one. What is best for democracy? His question is, what is best for America? And why is that? Because that's what Trump says his job description is. What is best for his nation?
Well said. Well said.
So we hope and pray that these two things will be in alignment. Yeah. But Netanyahu's first priority is Israel.
Yeah.
Period. Trump's first priority is America. Period. And how much the two things can align is the answer to your question.
Okay. That's a great answer. John, I want to hold off and come back to you on that because I know Trey is watching the clock a little more tight. So before you go, Trey, and feel comfortable to do whenever you do, here's my, and John, I'm going to tip it to you, the final question. If you were sitting right now with President Trump, what do you say to him? What do you tell President Trump? You have his ear.
Yeah, I mentioned that to you the other day. I'd like to have 10 minutes with Trump just to kind of give him an earful.
Wait, John, I want to have Trey answer it first.
Okay.
I know he's got to go, and then we're going to come back to you.
Yes, thank you for this time. John, great to see you. Jonathan, always love working with you. I'll be happy to answer this, and then I'll have to sign off for the night.
Great.
If I had the chance to give advice to the president right now, is your question, what I pray, and we as a church at First Melissa pray for all of our national leaders, including our president, is that they would be biblically wise, they would be courageous and bold and led by the truth of the scriptures. So we cannot understand how difficult the president's job is, and we cannot comprehend how many of those balls he has to juggle that I mentioned earlier. So economics, geopolitics, military strategy, diplomacy, and the list goes on and on. For the purpose of this conversation, we have to ask Mr. Trump, do you realize how tragic, how horrendous the result would be if Iran had its nuclear capability? And do you also understand that they are noted for, as you called it, kicking the can down the road? But please, everyone, remember, while they are delaying and kicking the can, they are not stopping their enrichment.
Correct.
They are delaying while advancing.
Correct.
That's why delaying is their strategy. So if you want them to stop advancing their nuclear enrichment, delaying is not the way to do that. Either a military set of strikes and or regime change is the only way to stop their advancing enrichment. Negotiations have not, and I think will not, do that.
Okay. We will get a copy of this to the White House and see if we can get any influence. Trey, stick around for as long as you need to, as you can. But if you have to go, thank you for participating. Very enlightening. John, let's come back to you. Can any deal with Iran be trusted? And is any deal with Iran potentially a good deal?
This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, an incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com.
The answer is no. No deal with Iran can be trusted with the current regime.
Okay.
If it was a different regime, sort of the Shah's family coming back, I know there's some people are hoping for that. That would be a very good start. But the regime that's there right now has to be. The regime there is Hamas. Okay, it's the same ideology that's driving this. And my concern that is in the Middle East right now, we have this convergence of all of these different Islamic regimes. And Mr. Trump, I'm concerned that you would go to the Middle East and I don't mind if you talk to Qatar. You know, I don't mind if you go talk to those guys. But this thing coming back that we've got these big, beautiful deals with them, that's Muslim Brotherhood. And I guess I would try to inform him that the ideology behind this is an ideology of conquest and control and ultimately annihilation. And so in that respect, the Iranian nuclear program is not just an Israeli problem. It's a Western democratic United States problem. The problem is that right now, politically in the United States, there's a huge divide among the America First people who are I was listening to a Christian program last night, Bible prophecy guys and everything, and they're talking about, like, why do we need to do anything with Iran? It's not a problem. Iran's wonderful. And you watch a guy like Tucker Carlson, who we like on a lot of issues, and he says, well, you know, Iran is okay. Why are we upset with Qatar? I mean, Qatar, I've been there. It's beautiful. They got all these beautiful stadiums. And the problem is we don't understand the fundamental problem with that religion. Dron Spielman.
Dron Spielman. Carlson is on the payroll there because otherwise nothing he says makes sense.
One would hope he's getting paid to be that stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's my take on it. I'm thoroughly disgusted with it. And I see a lot of people on the America First conservative MAGA right saying, well, what, why would he even concern about Iran? Are you kidding me?
Right.
And look, so let me use an example. So this is a little bit off the Iranian topic, but I've talked about this a lot. Erdogan did he engineered, and Trump even said this, he engineered the takeover of Syria.
Yep.
And now we have this former Islamist.
He's a recovering terrorist, like you're a recovering lawyer.
And the president says, oh, he looks nice in a suit.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't care about that, Mr. President. I could care less about that. You're ignoring the thing. And I, on True East on JNS TV, Dron Spielman did an interview recently with Harold Rode on Turkey. And Harold knows Turkey backwards and forwards. And everybody should go listen to that podcast. Because this is Erdogan. I mean, Erdogan, you know, when Trump moved the embassy to Jerusalem, Erdogan got all the Islamic states together for a big conference. And he was publishing maps in one of his newspapers that showed what if all the Muslim armies came against Israel? And you've got the maps right there on their websites. Even today, I could take you to them. Showing what they want to do. In January, Erdogan had a big a rally led by his son in Israel, in Istanbul.
Right.
And it said it had 3 points. Yesterday, Hagia Sophia, the largest church ever in Christendom, he turned into a mosque.
Yep.
Today, Umayyad or Damascus, because that was the Persian Umayyad dynasty. I've got the poster. Tomorrow, Al-Aqsa, Jerusalem and the Jews. Oh. And we sort of like, he's just trying to get political things. No, you need to understand. I have watched Erdogan for 20 years. By the way, he's 2 days younger than I am. So we share a birth month.
May you live.
But I'm telling you, he is Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic supremacist.
Correct.
And the Ayatollahs in Iran and the Iranian regime or the Iranian Revolutionary Guard that they give a big chunk of money and stuff to control to do their things. This is a huge juggernaut, and
yeah.
Israel's kind of at the center of it. But if you don't think it's happening, it's staying in the Middle East, you're silly. You're foolish. Go look at what's going on in the UK. Jonathan, I was in London 6.5 years ago. We were staying 4 blocks from Marble Arch, Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park. The Marriott Hotel we stayed at had 50 television stations that you could select from. 10 of them were Arabic language. In the heart of London, blocks from Buckingham Palace. That was 6.5 years ago. It's worse now.
And soon they're going to be speaking the Queen's Arabic.
They are. But look, we had attacks. We had two wonderful people gunned down in Washington, D.C. by the Free Palestine advocate or nut or whatever.
Bodies.
We had the attack in Boulder the other day. So it's here in America, too.
Yes, it is.
So I'm just saying it's silly to say that this has nothing to do with us.
Correct.
And that it's just Israel's fight. That's what I would tell the president.
Agreed. And so I'm not a panelist. I subscribe 1,000% As an Israeli, as an American, and America always, to my, needs to keep its hands in the pot in many, many different pots. Trey referred to it as juggling balls, but if you drop one, there are consequences. And there are many as it relates to our main topic. I just want to, first of all, I welcome Steve Foss, who's going to close us out in prayer in a minute. I want to acknowledge a comment from Kathleen Hindergartner. Israel needs to be careful in having the U.S. back any deal. Look at how Ukraine was promised protection. If they gave the nuclear arsenal back to Russia, can the U.S. be trusted to protect Taiwan if Taiwan invades? Israel needs to watch out for her own interests. Thank you for that comment, Kathleen. And I think you're right. Someone else commented they warned their cousin about Hamas in the United Kingdom, but now they're seeing it. And Colin Rose, you've asked some great questions about Poland's military. And should Israel and the U.S. support a Kurdish state to weaken Iran's strength? And is it worth potential problems with Turkey? In the interest of time, and that those are a little bit off topic, I'm going to pose those questions with your permission to both of the panelists and see if maybe as a follow-up we'll get a couple of paragraphs on that, because it's all related. And this is a conversation that's ongoing and something that we're going to be watching. I hope that Colin, and if I accidentally in deleting your questions or in answering your questions now deleted them and I don't have them in writing, I'm inviting you to please send them to me afterward. On this note, John, before I invite Steve to close in prayer, we've talked about a wide range of things here relating to Iran and all of Iran's tentacles. And I don't only mean Hamas and Hezbollah and Houthis, but all of the impact around the world. Coming back to the main question, the main topic, are Israel's concerns about a U.S.-Iran deal legitimate and why? I think we've answered that, but is there anything else that you would like to add here that we didn't cover?
Look, I think that many of us agree that there's a very significant parallel synergy between Israel and the United States. It's just the way it is. I think that's kind of biblical. I think it's prophetic. But I'm just saying that right now we live in such an incredibly volatile world that it's hard to keep level heads about things. And we need to pray that our leaders will have level heads and be able to look at the realities that are staring them right in the face. And my concern is that it's very easy to get sidetracked away from that. There are too many things going on. And listen, you know, I pray for President Trump and the leadership in our government and in Israel, because this is a very, very difficult world. My wife and I comment a lot of times, I'm glad I'm an old person. You know what I mean? But we also have responsibility to take care of things for future generations. Yeah. And I just pray that that God will give us all wisdom about how to act.
Amen. Beautiful. Okay. Relating to prayer, and as I ask Steve to please unmute before he does close us in prayer, and so I don't forget, you'll all get a notice about this, but Saturday, same time that we began this conversation, 9 p.m. Israel time, 2 p.m. Eastern, we're doing an urgent global prayer for Israel. John, you just happened to stumble into three or four of the main prayer points that we're going to be praying about. I invite as a follow-up for all of you to join that. I don't know how long that's going to go. I'm kind of figuring I might be up till midnight or later. We'll go as long as we have prayers that we need to beseech the Almighty. And I think that's for the foreseeable future, a 24/7 full-time job. Steve Foss and I had a mind-blowing conversation in Washington, D.C. Last month. On a completely different topic, but related. The topic was the solution for peace in Gaza. You can go to the Genesis 123 Foundation website and learn about what we've been promoting and have your mind blown sufficiently if you haven't yet. But I've invited Steve to come and close us out in prayer on this before I just wrap up with some final announcements.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Absolutely.
My only ask is this: if there's something in the prayer that you guys like when I'm done, just say, "I agree," for the power of agreement. So let's just go to the Lord. Hashem, we just bless you and thank you that you're the one true God. There's no God like you. There's no God beside you. You are God alone, and you have all of this in the palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. I just pray first and foremost for Jonathan. I just ask God that the joy of the Lord that was on his household during his daughter's wedding would reign and remain even to the third and fourth generation. Let the joy of the Lord be the strength of the Felstein household. I just pray for Trey and John, and I just ask God that you would bless them because they've given so generously, that you would bless them in a way that glorifies you and that gives them a treat to where they would know he that planted the ear, can't he hear? He that formed the eye, can't he see? And that you're pleased that he would make your kingdom, your people, stronger through wisdom and through knowledge. And God, we just call to mind the word that says the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. Donald Trump, everybody in authority, God, their heart is in your hand. And we just ask that you have your way. Have your way in the American government. Have your way in the American church. Have your way in the Jewish community. God, arise and let your enemies be scattered. Let the hand of protection be upon the Jewish people here and in Israel and all over the world, that they would know you're their God, you're their protector. And lastly, God, we just pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We just pray that there would be a tangible peace forever. Whoever's freaking, full of fear, whatever they're feeling, let the peace just reign in Jerusalem. And lastly, God, I just thank you so much for this. I ask that everything that was spoken, that you would just temper with wisdom and understanding for each one of us that's hearing this prayer. And let us ask, what's our part? What do you want us to do? Put us to work. Hineni, here we are. What would you have us do? Then give us the courage to do that, to do your will. Lastly, Yeshua, you said where two or more agree as if touching anything, it shall be done. So we all just agree, and we just thank you. Have your way, God. Have your way in Israel. Have your way in Iran. Have your way in our households, and have your way in our hearts.
Thank you, Steve. Amen. I agree. Friends, thank you for joining. This has been a powerful conversation. John Haller, Trey Graham, the fact that so many people who joined this conversation live and are still here and haven't left, I think is a testament to both the two of you as panelists. Steve, a powerful closing prayer that was appropriate, and also the urgency of this topic. So thank you for that, and thank you for joining. As we always wrap up our webinars and our podcast, which the audio will be available later this week, the Genesis 123 Foundation wants to offer you a gift for sticking with it, for listening to programs like this and participating over and over. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf. You can't see my bookshelf, but it's piled going back. Well, a lot of great things. Every month we offer somebody an opportunity to get a free book from Jonathan's Bookshelf. All you have to do is follow and like the program and share the link or comment or like it. And one person every month will receive a free book. And for now, we're closing in on 2 years since we published Israel the Miracle, which I referred to with Trey Graham as being one of the 75 authors. We're offering Israel the Miracle as a free gift. It's a $75 stunning coffee table book that will inspire you. So please like, share, comment, and continue to follow this. We're always grateful that this conversation, the podcast, is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. I don't know if anyone's ever done it, but I encourage people, if you're in the area, to go in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also special thanks to our friends, the Coyne family, for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 123 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and build bridges between Jews and Christians. As host, I have the privilege and indeed this week responsibility and honor to dedicate this conversation in memory of Kay Arthur, powerful, powerful woman of God. I miss her tremendously. She wrote one of the essays in Israel, the Miracle. She would pray over me like no one's ever prayed over me. And I miss her deeply. She died just in the last week and a half or two. And I pray that this will be a comfort to her family and loved ones. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. And we don't, as I said at the outset, we'd always love to hear your comments, especially as part of a dialogue relating to topics of traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi program. So please feel free to be in touch on that as well. And as I said at the outset, please do share this with others who will also find it of interest and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you.
Hallelujah, Al-Mashiach.